did two good talks. Most of the folks online are, I think all the folks online now have been able to do it, and there are folks sending me emails that want to open up, and I need to take care of them. So let's get started, because we do want to hear both these talks. And apologies, Mac and Mark. So let's get to you. Once again, let's take a quick roll so Mac and Mark can know who all they're speaking with. Let's start in the eastern U.S. Who we have online in the eastern U.S.?
Ron Cole.
Okay. Anybody else? There's Harley Throtson here in the eastern U.S. Anyone else in the East Coast?
George Schmidt at NASA Glenn.
Gary Horsham, NASA Glenn.
Dave Huntsman, NASA Glenn.
Gillespie Langley.
Sunny White, Johnson Space Center.
Space Chandler, headquarters.
Okay. Wayne Day, Space Studies Board.
Ah, great. Hi, Dwayne. Anyone else in the eastern U.S.?
Cynthia Null, NESC.
Great. Okay. Central time zone, folks?
This is Dan Lester, University of Texas.
Tom Sullivan, Johnson Space Center.
Dan Adamo, Houston.
Brett Drake, JSC.
Yolanda Mark. Marshall, JSC.
Martin McLaughlin, Northrop Grumman.
Dave Chevron, JSC.
Right, good. Good turnout, as expected. Yeah, who else in the center time zone?
Robert Bruce of NASA Stennis.
Who has gotten his charts right, Robert?
Absolutely. Thank you, Harley.
Got Patrick McKenzie, Ball Aerospace. Yep. He's from Boulder, but currently in Houston.
Jack Fresnito, Mark Holderman, and Mac Henderson.
Yes,
and Melissa, and actually representing, so that's obviously.
Yeah, so thank you.
All present and accounted for.
Okay, Mountain Time Zone, in addition to Andrea.
Kevin Miller with Ball Aerospace.
Josh Hopkins at Lockheed Martin.
Hey, Josh, welcome back. Haven't heard from you for a while.
Yeah, sorry, I missed a few of these.
Okay, out in the Pacific time zone.
Philip and Dyson, Boeing, Huntington Beach.
Very good.
Warren James. Dana, Northrop Grumman.
Warren James, Northrop Grumman, Redondo Beach.
Okay.
Ken Rourke, Northrop Grumman.
Great. Anybody who we missed?
You got Jim Barry from Northrop Grumman, too.
Good. Great. Okay, folks, Mac and Mark, the floor is yours. Please, a brief bio from each of you, and I think, Mac, you were going to speak first.
I see. Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Oh, a quick note, by the way, if you could all put your phones on mute as usual, but also we're going to try something new this time. And the meeting is going to be recorded, and the audio will be posted on the website. So your questions and presentations will be for posterity. So again, Mac, take it.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Harley and Mark, and I extend our appreciation for you having us on FASO. It's a very elite group, and we're pleased to be part of it and tell you guys what we're working on. I felt like it'd be appropriate before Mark talks. He's got really the real good presentation of talking about the multi-purpose, multi-mission space exploration vehicle. His is one of several applications that we have been looking at with the TAT team. TAT stands for Technology Applications Assessment Team. A little background is we had been doing quite a bit of work. Mark and I both are in advanced planning in the Shuttle Program Office, and one of the things we've been very proactive in is shuttle-derived heavy lift concepts, and we had done that in support of the President's Transition Team and also supported Norm Augustine's activity with information and worked with Paul McConaughey and company on shuttle drive concept. But I guess we asked to kind of turn that over, you know, more to the Marshall guys and let them work it along with their launch vehicle concept. But John Shannon, program manager, shuttle program manager, asked us to continue the team in looking at applications. What could you do to advance technology and so forth with existing and future launch capabilities? So we've continued with a concentration on what would be some technology applications that would be beneficial, you know, for exploration and maybe provide a business case for commercial friends or whatever. So we picked six that we're currently looking at. Of course, you could pick 100 or so, but with the team we had, which is fairly small, and using existing resources on a non-interfering basis that supports the show program, six was about all we could handle. They're actually across the top, and our first one is has to do with satellite servicing, and we kind of started that out with CEPI, as you know, Harley, and then we we're looking at an in situ capability, working with Paul Spudis, and then recently working with the commercial OCT and OCT folks, space-based solar power. We've got some ideas on that. And then I guess solar electric propulsion is big, and Sonny White is on the phone, and he's been working with us on that. Propellant Depot comes in all kinds of varieties. Where do you have them, and how do you grow them, and so forth like that. So we're working on some stuff on that. And then, of course, what you're going to hear in detail today a little bit about is the MMSEB. So what we tried to do is pick things that kind of interact together and support, you know, exploration in general and relate to one another, and how we might draw a station into the hunt and so forth to maybe demonstrate some of these capabilities, and what can we do to start out, and then where would we like to go. So that's kind of our plan. The next chart, kind of gives the objectives of what we're trying to do. Again, as I said, we want to mature technologies that will help us in the future. We want to find you know, things that interact with one another so they're complementary, like space-based solar power, you know, and how solar electric propulsion kind of work together, depots and satellite servicing. So we hope, you know, there's a mix of things that support one another. The key is we want to define initially that we can do soon, affordable, and we can partner with people like you guys and others to make them happen. One of the charters we have with the shuttle program is we've been tasked to do things that we can use the existing infrastructure, hardware, software, skills that we've developed for the space shuttle program, and how can we make use of those early on to help demonstrate these technologies. The next chart just says, hey, we've identified six applications. I'll just briefly mention them. We've been an independent group, but as we go along, we're trying to see what other teams are doing and how we can support them and how they can support us. And we've had excellent success in this area. I think everybody is kind of familiar with the NASA DARPA task, the three tasks that DARPA and NASA signed up for is satellite servicing, human satellite servicing, power beaming, propulsion, and the horizontal takeoff out of Dryden. We've actually got teams, I've got members on two of those teams, the satellite servicing and the power beaming, and we have members of their team on our team, so very good. MacGyver team, I don't know, that's mostly internal to JSC Engineering. There's been some stuff out on that, but it's how do we use, you know, our people and our facilities here at JSC to kind of get started on demonstrating things that we'll need in the future. Of course, HEP has gone through a change, I guess. It's gone from HEP to HEAT, I reckon. But we haven't been directly involved with HEP other than just, you know, indirectly keeping them abreast of what we're doing and then kind of monitoring what they're doing so that our work will be kind of supportive to that work and not necessarily conflict. Now, I think HEP has gone through a transition going over to phase three with new leadership and a new name, I understand. HEAT, is that right? Human Exploration Architecture Team. We want to stay closely coordinated with the OCT guys. We briefed the commercial in-space servicing folks. And we got Gary and a couple on that support that. We briefed them. And, of course, here we are briefing the FISO. I've assigned the leads to each of these. Ted Talley, which I think you're familiar with, is multifunctional. He's supporting, you know, we supported CEPI. He's supporting the NASA DARPA activity as well as supporting our team. The in-space, the in-situ stuff, we've got Dr. Spoutis from the Planetary Institute here that's working with us, along with Bill Rothschild, and we've just recently kind of partnered with Rob Kelso and looking at some commercial in-situ type stuff that maybe allows us to do something sooner and cheaper. Space-based solar power, as you know, we had had a team we jointly worked with DOD on a couple years ago to do something on station fairly soon with the shuttle. And we kind of got shut down on that activity. But there is an attribute that we had looked at about maybe doing some power beaming on the station that we're working with the Glenn guys. Solar electric propulsion, there's all kinds of applications with that. And Sunny Boy is kind of our lead on that. Pelham Depot, with Wally Twitchell, so what I've got is I've got quad charts of these six applications, and I'm not planning to go into those, but Harley, what I wanted to offer up to you, analogous to what Mark is going to talk to you about, we have a briefing package for each of the six. So if you see any of these applications you'd like to hear more about for future FISO meetings, we'd be welcome to brief you.
Offer accepted, and we can discuss that offline.
Okay, so you can just tick through the quad charts. They're there for your information. And I'm doing this in a fairly rushed fashion because I want to give Mark plenty of time. But what I ask each of the leads to do is define what their application is and what assets existed, what's the concept of operation, certainly identify the challenges and risks that we're exposed to, who are potential partners, who are customers, how they interact with others, and then actually we'd like to come up with kind of a swag on cost and schedule for each of these. I'm on the TAT milestone chart. I'm assuming you guys are keeping up with me. I can't read the page numbers, but it's a TAT milestone. It's a little
page 12.
Page 12. We started early October with this. We meet weekly, and we have, you know, probably anywhere from a dozen to two dozen, depending on the topic that we talk at our weekly telecons. We've actually completed preliminary plans. We briefed the MacGyver team. We briefed the commercial in-space satellite servicing guys. Certainly, we brief the shuttle program almost weekly on the stuff that we're doing, but we so that they're kind of up to where we're going. We brief most of the JSC management, including the center manager, on it, and we've got great support from MOD engineering and and Center Management. We're here today for the FISO. And one thing we've been somewhat unsuccessful with is we've been wanting to brief Bill Gerstenmaier and SOMD. Our plan initially was to brief him while he was at JSC during the 133 flight. And that was pretty good when it was scheduled back in December and briefing. But now that's moved out to February, and so we haven't had a chance to brief him. What we wanted to do is give Bill not only the overview, but give him a brief on each of the six applications so he'd have some good background. So we're kind of phasing out of the preliminary phase into a more formal, refined phase. And primarily the idea there is to continue with these applications and refine them and mature them so that we'll have some information that will support our budget activity for FY12 discussions that are coming up in February and March timeframe. And please interrupt me if you guys have any questions. The technology applications roadmap is kind of the six applications and some of the things that we're looking at doing. Of course, we're phasing out of the shuttle. We have the station launch vehicles. We have ELVs, and then we have COTS vehicles. We have concepts of heavy lift launch vehicle, shuttle arrived, or a larger heavy lift launch vehicle is the capabilities that we have available to us. The idea that we wanted to do is get started as soon as we can with doing ground tests and other things, and then maybe a station. If you see the up arrows, it kind of has the connectivity of what are some of these things for these applications can we demonstrate on the space station. And then further to the right would be more ambitious things we can do in terms of operations and so forth when we have heavy lift capability available. So give you some examples there. Of course, satellite servicing, hardly you guys know that in working with CEPI, we're going on 135, we're going to do the Dexter activity on station that will help with satellite servicing on the space-based solar power. We're working with the Glenn guys that are doing a laser power beaming from the station to FalconSat, and that looks like something we can do fairly soon. To support that, we're going to probably do a B-57 power beaming test probably in 13. And see, I skipped the in-situ, but there is a possibility we could just do a demonstration with the commercial guys maybe in 2014, to demonstrate a drill, a lander, rover type stuff. And then maybe 16, 17, we'd be talking about a production kind of demonstration where we'd actually process the lunar regolith and make ice for future applications. Solar electric propulsion. We've been doing trade studies whether it's best to use the station or do a free flyer and how we develop with that, and we got some ideas on that. That would be a good briefing I know you guys would be interested in. For depot, we're doing some fluid, cryogenic fluid transfers on station that would support future depot. We're looking at maybe getting started with the depot demonstration in LEO or GEO that maybe could support satellite servicing, and then growing that ultimately to a depot out of L1 that could maybe be a depot at the gateway and bring ice or water from the moon to that depot. And then I won't say much more about the MMSEV. Mark will cover most of that. The next chart is the cover repeated. And again, on the bottom left, it's taking the launch capability we have now with ELVs or COTS or existing stuff, and let's get started. Let's don't wait around till we have a new launch vehicle. Let's get started with what we've got, and then as we evolve the new launch capability, we take advantage of that. And let's see, I think Bernard Cutter gave you guys an excellent briefing on how with Delta IV Heavy could support gateway activity at Earth Moon L1. I think deliver around 16 or so metric tons. I think Ted has shown you that with a heavy lift guy, we could probably deliver 16 to 36 or so metric tons. And then, so you just see, we can start and do things with the existing stuff and not wait around. But yet, there's to our advantage to get heavy lift capability soon so we can expand the envelope of what we can do. So that's kind of our goal. Next chart is, this is kind of how everything kind of fits together. I'm on the TAT interactivity chart.
Oh my! This looks like a Metro map on a bad day, Mac.
Okay, now what you're missing, if you go to the slideshow mode, it makes it a lot easier to understand. So if you do the first click, it kind of shows the six applications we do, and then if you click through the next click after that, it shows how the applications are all tied together. And then the next click says, hey, we want these applications to support exploration, going to GEO, going to the moon, going to Lagrangian points, going to asteroids or Mars or whatever. And then as you tick through them, it shows how each application, how they support those various destinations and so forth. And then halfway through those clicks, it opens up bars on the top. It's called HEF, NASA, DARPA, MacIver, OCP, Commercial and Space Servicing, and I've added FISA. So how do these interrelate to those activities? And so it just shows us how these applications support each of those groups. And if you go to the FISA one, and Harley, I'll need your help here, I'm seeing how we can support you guys, of course, Mark and the MMSEB, you're very interested in, certainly interested in depot and are interested in satellite servicing. Now, I don't know whether we have connectivity to other things that you guys, I wouldn't be surprised if you weren't interested in solar electric propulsion and maybe interested, but I just have you connected to those three right now.
That's great. Not so much in situ, not so much ISRU as you might expect, but we did do a couple of years ago and have had a couple of presentations, not recently, about getting our gateway and gateway supply systems out to libration points powered by SEP. Highly efficient, affordable, but slow, so it would be your supply chain, not your human mission. But yeah, that certainly is appreciated, and that certainly does link to us.
Okay, and so then if you look at them all together, like you said, it's really a maze of activity there. Okay, get off the stage. I think I told you all these things, and then the forward plan is, we're continuing to share plans with people like you and management and everything. We're planning to refine them, and mature them so that we have something for our budget discussions. There's a lot of trade that we need to do. Is it better to start off with the depot in LEO and then fill stuff up and take it up to GEO or put the DFO in GEO? Is it better to do an experiment on station or do a supplier? And so we're looking at trade studies. Other things we're interested in is... we want to continue to coordinate with the other teams and common goals for exploration. We want to go out and try and talk to potential partners and set up agreements, and then hopefully to have these summarized late February, early March. That's pretty much it. I felt like that was appropriate background, and now you're ready to hear from Mark. One of our applications is probably one of our more long-range applications, But in each of these, we'll say, hey, what can we start on now that might help us build toward that long-range plan? So I can come back and give you a lot more on TAT later as we develop and brief other managers, so keep you guys abreast of what we're doing. But I'll entertain questions, but I'd like to turn it over to Mark. And
let's go over to Mark, and thanks, Mac. You and I can take the we can discuss future presentations offline. I think particularly as you bring this your roadmapping your activity along over the next month and a half or so, if I understood your schedule, but very much looking forward to it. Particularly sympathetic, at least speaking for myself, I think some other folks as well, a sort of a stepping stone, let's get something underway sooner rather than later, and then build on that.
Get the magic button. I mean, that's what I get every time I talk this. What can you do right away?
Exactly. So, Mark, over to you, and then, folks, just so you know, because we got started late because of that technical glitch, we do have this phone line 24/7. So, we'd like to wrap it up at the top of the hour because other folks have a schedule and so on. But there's absolutely no problem running past the top of the hour. So, Mark, don't want to take any more of your time. Go.
Okay, I guess we need the first chart up, Matt. Can we find that?
No, I don't know.
We're going to
what's up? How do we get Mark's presentation up?
Well, while we're waiting for that, a lot of you have the first chart in hand, and it's called Nautilus X, and you can see it there, and you say, where did the name come from? And Nautilus kind of has an interesting background. Of course, Captain Nemo made it famous in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and Admiral Rickover did some admirable engineering work getting the first nuke sub under the North Pole. And then if you learn how to make cappuccino with your new cappuccino machine at 3 o'clock, you usually don't end up going to sleep until 2 a.m., and you come up with a nifty acronym called Nautilus. Anyway, that's non-atmospheric, which is key. It's a universal transport.
Just a little bit. Can you guys see the chart?
Yeah, I'm
okay. Okay, and it's intended for a lengthy United States exploration, and depending on the audience that you're presenting to, you can change the word state to space, because then it becomes an international effort if everybody wants to get on board. But this is just kind of a collection of ideas that will help us hopefully generate some ideas for exploration in a, I think, sort of a larger concept than what we've been accustomed to in the past. Let's go to the next chart. Put this aside and save it, because you'll probably come back to it and take a look at it. But the two things that you should take away from this is that, one, we went in with the understanding that there would be an HLV. You name it, go build it. We'll be there to take advantage of it. It was our intention to build this in parallel with the HLV effort. We figured anywhere between 2 and 3 launches, and we had an understanding of what the volume and mass would be capable of getting into orbit, and so we took advantage of that. The big yellow box down in the corner kind of says it all, $3.7 billion. A lot of people would say, yeah, right, 64 months. We can't do that with Orion. And the interesting thing here is, like, folks, you need to go back and take a look at history, because how we cost this thing is not how we did shuttle orbiter or how we did Apollo. I'm a student of the Lunar Excursion Module, the Apollo program. That was a spacecraft, and that is how we costed this. And if you take a look at this, there's some really, crafty and keen engineering diversions from what we classically do today to make this thing actually be able to cost that much. And the folks that helped me put together the numbers on that are actually pretty good and come out of the old shuttle contracts and procurement office. And we actually think it's quite doable. And we're not being overly optimistic. We're just expecting to be able to give them the opportunity to do that. All right, let's go to the next chart, Mac. So we're gonna kind of flip through some of these, because y'all are probably interested in the nifty graphics that Frasenito supplied for us. So we'll get to that. These are just good basic system goals that everybody ought to write down and take a look at and say, well, gee, that makes sense. Let's collect them and not be too confining. The one key thing there that you see is it's a crew of 6, and that also, hey, look at the self-sustaining operation period that we elected. You can do it anywhere between 1 and 24 months. Of course, if you're going to do 24 months, you've got to have a lot of volume for logistical support, and you'll see how we do that coming up here. The last bullet there is that we're going to talk a lot about the propulsion units. We are not designing a propulsion unit for this. What was proposed is that this is going to be a vehicle that can adapt itself to a wide variety of thrust regimes for different mission-specific applications. And so we can either be chemical, or we can be SEP, we can be a combination of both. We can, you know, transit from LEO up to L1 and park there and take advantage of a depot, if that's indeed there. There's a host of things that you can do with this type of mental gymnastics just if you adhere to it a little bit, and that was kind of one of our guiding tenets. Let's go to the next one, Matt. So you heard me talk about large volume for logistical store. Yeah, you need all that stuff there. Artificial gravity. Okay, partial G for crew health, and also, folks, GNMC. I'm sure everybody on this telecon understands what that's for. You take advantage of the dynamic that you're introducing into the vehicle and use it. You don't overpower it to negate it. True visual command and observe capability for the crew. In talking with the Space and Life Science people, because this is a long journey vehicle, you have to understand that just staring out of a 6x10 window probably isn't going to really cut it for mental health on a crew. So we've got some interesting ways that we're going to address that. Docking capability for everybody that's up there. In other words, CEV, Orion, or European Auto Transfer Vehicle. Remember, we can be international in nature. And the last one is really important because we see how difficult that is to address today, a robust ECLIS system. Now, that is IVA-based, internal vehicular activity. We do it all inside. We don't go outside for anything. And in order to do something like that, you have to have a lot of volume and some rather clever ways to lay that out, and we're going to show you that as we progress here. Next page, under attributes, pretty much basics that you can see there. We do have a very large airlock, and you'll see that. And self-powered, we said, all right, you know, we're still in the sales mode here. We probably will be forever, but the photovoltaic array and solar dynamic are certainly things that you want to look at there. And depending on propulsion that's picked and the mission that's required, you know, do we have to furl our solar arrays or do we have to fold solar dynamic type power? You know, those are considerations that you put into your operational scheme, but we just want people to know that we're thinking about that and the overall system integration to putting something like this together. Next, Matt. More of the same basic, but the last part there says, the last bullet on that page is inflatable, deployable, module, structural design. A lot of folks know TransHab because that was something of a JSC development. Not many people know Hoberman. Dr. Hoberman, in my mind, is a mechanical engineering genius, and I encourage you, and there's some in the later charts in there, you'll actually see ways to go and find out about what he has done, and I shared that once with some of the folks down at Langley and the structures divisions there. It's a new way of working, I think, as you see it here, in concert with deployable pneumatic-type inflatable structures to get it to some really large volumes in space. And remember, all it has to do is to be a LEM. We don't have to be an Apollo or Orion type of module. We don't have that huge burden of reentry, nor do we have to take the ascent dynamics because we are never coming back into the atmosphere. Next, Matt. And then, down there at the bottom, relative to ECLIS again, since that's kind of what we're focusing on right now, you can see everything that you have to do all at once. And to accommodate that, we've done some interesting tests and closed-loop systems here at JSC, and that's just your basic grocery store shopping list of everything that we know that we're going to have to do. And so if you take a look at that in the next 5 years as far as how we're being able to not necessarily miniaturize but shrink in some volume, we still need a whole lot of real estate to accommodate all that, especially if you do it IVA. Okay, next, Matt. Okay, so there it is. Lots of color, and you see something that's uh, probably not most people are familiar with, but it meets all the criteria that we just marched through. The first thing I'd like you to take notice of is that the main core there, which goes up in the first launch, is roughly 14 meters by 6.5 meters. That's really big.
Mark, this is Harley. You're on flight 8?
Boy. It's the picture of Nautilus X.
It's the big picture. Okay. Fine.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I wanted to make sure I was where I was.
All right, yeah, that's where we're at. And so what you see there is the integration all at once of the centrifuge. Now, that's a 60-foot diameter centrifuge. We're not quite at 1G there with that. That's at 6 RPM. There's a lot of design that's gone into the centrifuge because we've worked with Sam Poole, who's retired from Space and Life Sciences, and he gave us a lot of guidance on all that. That is a combination inflatable Hoberman structure with some hard structure aspects to it. We've come up with a kind of a nifty way that you'll see further on in the back of the what we call a dynamic ring flywheel, which basically takes out some of the flutter and rumble and any parasitic torque that might come through that to the overall vehicle. So actually, we had a lot of fun with that, and if we can turn it over to our structures people, both at Marshall, Langley, and Ames, and JSC, I think those guys would have a lot of fun with that. The other thing that you see there is the command and control observation deck and industrial airlock. These are slide-out units from the contiguous first launch that comes up there. That's a technique that's been used in another aspect of our government, and that's where I came from. That's old CIA NRO days. Stuff like that works. Anyway, it's a good way to get volume, especially if you want to maintain a habitable environment on the inside. So that's the basic overview picture. Let's go to the next one. Now we're starting to get into a little bit of the details here, and you can see right off the bat the TransCab-type modules that we've accommodated in the overall layout of the structure. You see there is an annotation to the external dynamic ring flywheel. You can barely see it down there. You'll see our first demonstration on the ISS for a centrifuge, and it'll become a little bit more evident in the backup charts, and I'll show you that if we have time. But that basically takes out the mass rotation. Now understand, when we started sizing this, just the vehicle itself, you know, we took advantage of what we saw our throw weight from an HLV was going to be and how many launches we were going to have up there. So we kind of worked backwards from that, just like the LEM guys had to do, and said, okay, here's what we can come up with associated direct. You also see a first sign there of what we call the EXO thrust system, which is the thrust and load bearing throughout the entire vehicle, and that's all integrated. How you join these type of structures on orbit to actually accommodate a thrust is going to be a little bit different than what we've learned with ISS, but nonetheless invaluable information and knowledge that we've gained from ISS. You also see a rendition at the back end there of, let's call it a chemical type of a propulsion unit that's going to get us from LEO up to L1. We have to transit that fairly quickly, and the notion is, would we have crew on board while we transited through the Van Allen boat? May or may not, but shoot, that's what MOD is here for, and they'll have a lot of fun with that. You can also see we've got startup thrusters to get our 6 RPM up there. We have COPVs on the outside of the access tunnel there to go from the center carriage and core out to the outer ring. Now, the notion here is that we would do two things with this artificial gravity. One, we would have provisions for a standing exercise right in the first hard collar that you see there at the end of the transit tube with the little gold balls on it. That's because the Space and Life Science feels that we have to have vertical axial load. The rest of it would be for some provisions storage within that, and also that's going to be accommodating for three crew members that are going to be in there. You can look at it and you say, well, gee, is it a CG axis balance type of a system? In other words, is it going to be off balance? And the answer is, we're going to accommodate that some extent by using internal bladders for shifting of fluids around. Some of those fluids could be, quote, waste products. Some could also be used for consumption, i.e. just water and other fluids for general processes on board. So we're thinking in that overall context of this has to be ultimately a balanced system, and it has to be able to accommodate different weight changes with crew going in and out of it. But bottom line here is that you have to address the need, whatever the design is, for artificial gravity for the crew's health and also to accommodate GNC for the vehicle. All right, next chart. And by the way, feel free to jump in and have a question and tell us we're not, because we'll accommodate that as best we can. Here's a view looking from the aft section. Now, you can see the little, quote, external tank-ish type of colored propellant containers there. That's what we call our universal integration platform for the propulsion module. And that's where we accept the load. We have all control goes through that, and that's how we can accommodate a couple of different type of propulsion units, whether it is chemical or whether it is SEP. You know, when we go in and design this, we're gonna have two different types of min-max that we'll use for load accommodation, and of course the carriage and thrust bearings on the centrifuge are gonna have to accommodate that, as well as also the main hab structure that you see up there. You can also see off to the right, we've got the door open on the industrial sized airlock, and you can also see that with this trans-hab unit here in the foreground, or I'll call it trans-hab-ish, that's our Eclis unit, and embedded in there is the entire Eclis system for the whole vehicle, and it comes off of the center core, unfolds, active membranes, regenerative in nature. We got a lot of scrubbers going on in there, ionization, water filtration, urine extraction, you know, solids removal, et cetera. That goes on there. It's a big plant, and so we're going to have to accommodate that. The other two are basically logistical support, and you saw what those were referenced earlier, a lot of, you know, socks, food, you know, clean underwear, reading material, however you want to take a look at it. That's what we've got to stick in there. And I apologize for repeating quickly, but we're trying to get a lot in here for you all. Next, Matt. So it says, well, that's really nice, and boy, I don't exactly have under $4 billion to give you this month, so what else could you do? And the answer is, well, we've got to go off and have a demonstration of the centrifuge, and the best place that we can do that is on the International Space Station. Taking a look with some friends here at JSC, and you can see what our range of cost is and what overall how we do this, how we build and construct this. This can go up on, right now we're expected to go up on a Delta II as far as packaging goes, and the cost that you see down there obviously doesn't include the Delta II launch, but that's who we can go up with. You can see everybody gets a part of this, from, you know, Draper's lab to Glenn. We can even go, you know, all the way out to Ames, and you see that this is something that will give us our first understanding of what a rotational mass, and it won't be that large, does to an understood and well-characterized GNC system, which is the International Space Station. And we've got a way, even as we get into this, you can see how we can isolate ourselves so we don't have any problems with microgravity. But we also get an invaluable amount of engineering data that will come out of this. Space and Life Sciences have lobbied me to make this actually bigger than what we started out with. We were going to keep it at 30 feet in diameter, and it was primarily going to be an effort to just test out the seal design, deployment techniques, and what the overall impact on it was, and then we were actually going to be able to put astronauts into it, and they were going to pull about 0.3 G. At 6 RPM, we could get up a little bit more at 10 RPM, but 6 because of Coriolis effects and some data we got from the Russians, says that's about the best that we want to embrace. That idea spawned them to say that they really want some test data on as close to 1 G as we can, and they also wanted a flat 4. Anyway, there's other renditions that address all that. A key aspect of this effort is that we're using existing hardware to make this happen, and one of the key pieces is the external airlock that currently accommodates docking system into the port there that we're going to accommodate, and we've talked to the space station folks. And Mac, I guess you said stuff that you found is of interest, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to the next chart. There's our challenges for the, going in and taking a look at the overall space exploration vehicle that we call MMSEV. That's multi-mission space exploration vehicle. It's not the multi-purpose crew vehicle. This is different. The multi-purpose crew vehicle, or Orion, will, of course, work with this and be a major part of, getting the crew home if that's the vehicle of choice. There may be a commercial option as well. It all depends. And you can read through that very quickly. Okay, Mac. So here's partnering and collaboration for MMSEV. Everything kind of stands there. You can see where and who would potentially be doing what. We're trying to make this a very large NASA endeavor. It unites most of NASA and takes advantage of all the expertise in all the centers. And we think it'd be pretty exciting. Next, Mac. Here's our first TAT demonstration. Remind you that this is part of Mac's TAT, the Technology Applications Assessment Team underneath the shuttle program. And the first goal out of all of this is the little blue box at the bottom, which says we're going to, basically get an understanding of humans and how they respond to a first partial G in space, because we will get some of that data. And we've kind of thought that through, and I'd love to show you a different time how we're going to accommodate that, even with the space station demo. Next map. Here's the centrifuge demo. You can see when we were kind of hoping to do this. We would like to start out in 2011. Probably not going to happen. We're still under a CR, so we'll just move that around. But the costs actually are pretty well thought out at this point. And actually, this is the first where you can see the dynamic ring flywheel there. It's the it appears as the yellow and the black hashed ring there towards the center of the hub. Next map. Right there, you can see some of our calculations that we ran through Space and Life Sciences over on the left as far as what all our equivalent would be on the wall. Please understand that what we're trying to do here is to just get one of the astronauts in EVA suit into the hub. We'd actually have one in the hard section up there, and then we would offload the mass down to the other hard ring there with piped in waste liquid from into a bladder, and then we'll start our RPM march up, and we'll see how the astronaut starts to respond. This is the first time we'll get data and insight to this. Like I said, Space and Life Science had encouraged us to go beyond that and to get into higher artificial G, even to the point instead of lying down to actually be standing inside there. That'll be more of an engineering challenge and, of course, cost more, but we'll do whatever the people at the bank allow us to do.
Marcus Hurley, is the node to which you're attaching, pardon my ignorance, isn't that on ISS, isn't that designated for one of the regular resupply missions?
Right. See, we don't know how much time we're going to get. So the whole aspect here, you can see that FMRMS is there and it's in a burst mode. This thing is designed to be pulled and taken off and put back together again a number of times if you want to do that. This is notional. We haven't gone in and talked to the station guys in length that said, all right, where could we mount this permanently?
Okay.
That's one of the things that we have to do, but we're not going to bother them until we get a little bit more interest in a couple of nods and grunts from folks.
Hey Harley. This is
yeah?
Money. I think there's also some discussion of adding another node on the front of station as well.
Okay. Great.
So
yeah,
there's a lot of discussions going on the station right now.
Yeah, so we'll find real estate wherever it's there, and we can undock and dock because we're dealing with the orbiter external airlock. So we've already got that piece of rather critical flight hardware in our bag of tricks, and that's kind of what makes one of these things interesting is that we've already bought and paid for probably what would normally be a huge cost burden. All right, next. There you can see a couple of the other things. You see a little nut out there, it's called stabilizer rings. One of the things that, and that is a notional representation of what we would really do. That is of a Hoberman type of a deployment. And like I said, you can see down in the left-hand box there are a bunch of different sites to go to and see some of this work. And I think you'll get a bunch of ahas for space application. And that's what we will use to stabilize the ring for the RPM, because just an inflatable alone has got a potential of possibly collapsing on itself. Okay, Matt. And there it is, far view. I'm getting real close to end of time here. I've only got about a minute. So you can read through what we're looking to do on that. There's some aspects of it to talk specifically to how we start it up, how we drive it, et cetera. And I guess I'll say, do we have one more? Yeah, that's the best one. That's a really neat one that Jack and his folks had provided us. And so you get a good understanding what the overall mass of the centrifuge would do to station. The good news is the station is still bigger, so the dog still gets to wag the tail. And from what we can understand, actually, any of the torque that would come off of this might offload some of the CMG clusters in one axis, so you might actually get a benefit on station from this. And we do have a rather clever way of going into a soft burst mode so that we wouldn't have any kind of perturbation to any of the micro-G experimentation on board. And I encourage you to take a look at some of the backup charts that at your leisure, and if you have any questions, we'd only be too happy to accommodate you, and I think I made it by 3 o'clock.
Yeah, you did. or we say here at Goddard, you made it by 4 o'clock.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Very good. Well, I got a number of questions. I had to step away to handle one of the technical glitches that we had, so I may have missed the following. Do you have, or could you point to me in your chart, packing for the space station module, not for the whole Nautilus, packing diagrams or calculations or designs for whatever vehicle that's going to take it?
Actually, that's on. I've been working on that, on how you fit into the fairings. I don't have that. What you're talking about is deploying the ISS centrifuge demo is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. And you have to be clever with that. Actually, you use some of the internal volume of the external airlock is part of the cradle area that you're going to have for deploying of the ring, and it's all pretty much autonomous. You don't see all of the design evidence in the renderings that you have here, but we have it there. And actually, over the winter and Christmas holidays, we built a very crude dynamic ring flywheel with the moving masses that we've, we used a laser pointer, an oscilloscope, and some nifty strain gauges, and doggone it, if it doesn't look like it might actually work. So we have an idea there to really balance it out. Now, if you were really going to design this thing and you weren't worried about, sticker shock too much, you would say, well, of course, I'd use a counter-rotating centrifuge of equal mass, and that would be the best thing to go up there and do, and that might be the ultimate Nautilus design. See, one of the things that you have to understand with this is that this is supposed to be a learning vehicle, just like Nautilus was for the United States Navy in the new power program. You don't have to necessarily get it all right. It doesn't have to be completely perfect. We may just build one of these, and then we'll know how to build the really big one that goes to Mars. And, Matt, go to the last chart. If you go to the last two charts in the backup, you'll see what the one that could maybe go to keep going more and more. None more. There it is. And that's the quick version that's going to go to Mars and actually has accommodations in the little hexagonal honeycomb sections for your descent craft and what have you. And of course, you can't see the huge space electronic propulsion and chemical rocket engines in the back because they ran out of room. But that just showed you that, you're gonna need a lot of logistical support to go somewhere if you're in a journey class vehicle for pure exploration. And that's what this allows you to go do.
Yeah, actually, this isn't the point of your of of your talk, but does that look like nuclear thermal propulsion on that second to the last diagram?
I'm not going to say where I got it from. But that's up to the propulsion guys. That's the beauty of good systems engineering within NASA as a whole, is you will figure out the right propulsion and vehicle marriage for the specific mission that you're going to go off and do. So,
hey, Harley.
This
is Sonny. We're taking good care of him on the propulsion.
He's in good arms.
That's right.
I have one question with the, since you're on this extended duration explorer.
This is George, right?
Yeah, this is George. Sorry, Harley. Great presentation. Thank you. I just wanted to ask, now, if you went, let's say, for a purely orbital mission around Mars with the Extended Duration Explorer, what components or elements would you not need on that vehicle?
Well, you mean if you're just going to go around it?
Yeah, just go into orbit around Mars, you know, for a year or so, do telerobotic exploration on the surface.
Well, actually, what you would do is, you just said the magic word, telerobotics. Instead of having a human lander embedded in the hangars that you see there in the top two positions, the hexagonal hangars, instead of it being a human craft that goes down, you could load it up with, remember those hangars are about 10 meters across. Those are big. They're going to have, you know, the propellants are going to go with them, and you're probably, if you're going to spend a year in orbit, you're going to put down a bunch of rovers and probably deploy a couple of satellites while you're up there. And you would probably do that for communications purposes anyway. So what you see here would probably be a fantastic initial concept, if I could be so bold, to go into Mars orbit.
Right.
Phobos.
One other question, excuse me. I didn't catch it at first, but that the hexagonal cross-section, that element in front of the centrifuge, what exactly does that do? What does that house?
Okay, that's all your command and control structure. That is basically the heart of the vehicle for all the HAB purposes. And each one of those, think of it as a series of death drawer openings. And, you know, I guess all I'm liberty to say is this wouldn't be the first time, that was on. The airlock slides out. Yeah, it all slides out. And remember, we don't have to come back to the atmosphere, and we're not constrained to the station type of a construct, and so that's why we chose to go with what is represented as flat panel, because we're doing this from the School of Lunar Excursion Module, which is a completely different school of thought than what we've seen evidence in spacecraft design as of late, or station design actually. So, and you can also see the little forward pod there on the side that comes out, and that's your basic command port. And that'll help Orion or Dragon or whomever come in and dock there at the forward docking node for crew egress and for return down there.
Great, thanks.
Well, you picked, Harley, a good pathfinder for your first test. Mark has done a super outstanding job and a lot of detail. And some great engineering work on this. The other applications are a little bit simpler, but they all kind of culminate to support, this type of vehicle that Mark is talking about. So going back to the picture cover on the TAP briefing, our intent is all these pieces kind of fit together and each support one another to get us beyond low Earth orbit and out in space.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, go back to, it's very ambitious, going back to, I think, a key thing that NASA, and of course those of us who work for NASA have to address, is get these kinds of things started. Start getting us using the space station effectively, start developing the key technologies, and move forward. This is a pair of really nice and very appropriate back-to-back presentations. Now let's start doing the prototypes.
Well, yeah, and I'd almost like to dare Congress to give us just, $4 billion to go to the vehicle.
Okay, well, we'll just, there's the end of the talk now. Mark's an imaginative guy, but I think he's lost it right there.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, and I will say that the cost that we came up with this does not include the propulsion. So that's just for what you see. That doesn't include the launch vehicle cost, and it doesn't include the propulsion that you're going to need.
Well, you're working with Sonny, and so and Sonny's got a big checkbook.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just don't tell my wife.
Hey, Harley.
Yeah.
Joe Tanner here. I'm sorry I got in late.
That's
Mark,
right.
I want to ask you one question, and if you've already addressed it, I apologize. What's your radiation protection protocol?
What we've gone with is that back in the carriage assembly for the centrifuge, that's kind of a double wall thing in there. So we were going for a slush hydrogen, and then we also have a magnetic bottle that the fellow's name escapes me, but he's at MIT, and he's doing some pretty good pathfinding effort up there. And so that's where you're going to do a lot of localization for that and spend as much time there as you can. The big hexagonal section that you see out in front, that really is supposed to be minimal time that you're up there because, you have some shielding from MLI and from actual materials, but it's not like what you're going to have back in the safe center of the centrifuge hub.
Okay, thanks. That's great. Thanks. I'll maybe send you an email later to talk more.
Oh, you bet.
Hey, Harley, before we sign off, I know we're running a little over, but we got started a little bit late. I would like for you to think about a reciprocating, and maybe we meet Friday mornings, and I'm not sure that's a good time for you, but sometime in the future to help us understand that, what we're doing supports what you guys are doing, too. It'd be nice if you came and briefed us on kind of a FISO and what you're all about and what you're looking at and how we can help you.
Yes, of course, always good to visit, have had good conversations with you all. As it happens, we're trying to set up an unrelated project, one that actually we hope to have in an upcoming FISO telecon, set up a meeting down at JSC. Here's a little note ahead, folks. A design for using the space station as a decade-long testbed for deploying, assembling, repairing complex optical systems. And so we've got a meeting, trying to set up a meeting down at JSC on that, and part of that will be a FISO presentation. So, yeah, we'll look forward to that.
Hey, Harley, you meet with Mike Burdage?
He's on our list.
Okay.
Hey, Harley?
Yeah.
Dave Huntsman, before we cut off there, I just wanted to really give Mark and the guys a pat on the head here because this is exactly the sort of thing NASA and especially JSC should be working on. Not concentrating on designing Apollo-like vehicles that do taxi service to and from the Earth's surface. That should be handled by others. But the up-and-out stuff, and especially something that is flexible, that can have add-on modules and everything else. So I just wanted to give Mark a pat on the head. I'm really happy to see this come out of JSC and Mark not having been shot yet.
Very agile.
Yeah, very agile. You're more agile than I am. But and Mark, and I gotta end it with Mark. Whoever hired you away from the CIA should get a pat in NASA, should get a pat on the head too.
That'd be Dave Huntsman. I didn't know he's still not in the CIA.
I think that might be time to call an end to the excellent telecon, and there are a number of follow-up questions that folks have been sending to me, which I'll forward to various folks. Mark and Mac, thank you so much. We've been looking forward to this for a number of weeks, and Mac, we'll be in touch about subsequent follow-on presentations.
Sounds great. Appreciate it.
Thank you all.